Whether I'm worried about hosting or just giving that perfect gift, creating a delicious holiday for my loved ones is super important to me. From effortless holiday hostings to unforgettable gifts, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. They've always been super convenient in giving me the most high-quality steaks I could ask for, whether for myself or a loved one. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. Save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com, and for an extra $35 off, use code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM. Go to omahasteaks.com and use code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Okay, motherfucker!
What are you looking at, sir?
I'm looking at you, miss.
Run that, baby.
I'm not the Zodiac. And if I was, I certainly wouldn't tell you.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to The Decade Project. This is One Heat Minute Productions Patreon podcast. It starts off as a Patreon podcast, and then it will come around again in a year's time to the main feed. I'm your host, Blake Howard. And The Decade Project, if you're not aware, is a show where we go back and look at films from our nice vantage point 10 years away and see what's actually still hanging around and what is great and what's worth revisiting. It's also the ceiling of many of your streaming services that you subscribe to, physical media forever. So that's probably a good idea if you haven't got some of these ones that we talk about to get them as quickly as possible. Today I'm talking to a great filmmaker, a very good friend of mine, a man who I'm very, very happy to say is safe and sound in LA and the chaos of LA, and is one half the Janus, the other side of the coin, the Alec Trevelyan, if you will, of the James Bond Alec Trevelyan pairing that is the Light the Fuse boys. I know I'm blending genre, franchises here. It's Charles Hood. Charles, how are you? Welcome to the Decade Project again.
How are you,
my friend?
I'm great, Blake. Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure. It's been too long. I always love coming on your show, and I really appreciate the GoldenEye reference.
A huge GoldenEye.
Yeah, that's one of my, I think it's top five Bond.
Look, and there's other stupid references that I can't get out of my head from old Bond movies, like Judi Dench saying, "I sent 009 to kill Reynard, shot him in the head, took out his medulla oblongata." There's something about that in like one of the worst Bond movies of all time that is just in my head forever. I've never been able to get rid of it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to make you jump over franchises. Charles is, of course, one half of Light the Fuse, the incredible Mission Impossible, official Mission Impossible podcast. Really just pursed and poised, waiting for the final reckoning and all of the chaos that's going to ensue with that one. So that's sensational. But today, we're not talking about any missions, although you may be back for a mission film that was released in 2015 at a later date. We are talking about what I think was kind of deeply underrated at the time and now just a genuine, fantastic cinematic experience if you can watch it even from your lounge room. It is Danny Boyle's and Aaron Sorkin's Steve Jobs. Have a quick listen to the trailer, and then Charles and I will come back and talk about it.
What do you do? You're not an engineer. You're not a designer. You can't put a hammer to a nail. I built the circuit board. The graphical interface was stolen. So how come 10 times in a day, I read Steve Jobs as a genius? What do you do?
Musicians play their instruments.
I play the orchestra.
I hear you've been worse than usual this morning. I didn't think that was possible.
It's a system error.
Fix it.
Fix it?
Yeah.
We're not a pit crew at Daytona.
This can't be fixed in seconds.
You didn't have seconds. You had 3 weeks. The universe was created in a third of that time.
Well, someday you'll have to tell us how you did it.
I'm begging you to manage expectations out there.
You see how this reminds you of a friendly face? It's warm and it's playful and inviting and it needs to say hello.
If you keep alienating people for no reason, there's be no one left for it to say hello to.
Your Apple stock was worth $441 million, while your daughter and her mother are on welfare.
She's not my daughter!
You must be able to see that she looks like you.
You're issuing contradictory instructions, you're insubordinate, you make people miserable.
Even if that were true, doesn't sound that diabolical to me.
We've spoken to the fire marshal and the building manager. They're gonna come in and tell everyone to leave.
If a fire causes a stampede to the unmarked exits, it'll have been well worth it for those who survive.
The board believes you're no longer necessary to this company.
I sat in a garage and invented the future because artists lead and hacks ask for a show of hands.
You're gonna end me, aren't you?
You're being ridiculous. I'm gonna sit center court and watch you do it yourself.
Make everything all right with Lisa. Fix it!
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome.
All right, Charles. It's 2015. There's a Steve Jobs movie coming out. There's actually multiple Steve Jobs movies that came out. There was Jobs, the terrible one with Ashton Kutcher. There was other things that were happening.
And then I never saw that one. Did you see it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I feel like I should, but also, I don't know. There's only so much time.
No, don't see it. You're a dad. you understand. Yeah, exactly. Some people are like, do you want to watch The Flash? There's only 150 episodes of the CW show The Flash, and they're all an hour long. And I'm like, No. That's 75 movies I haven't seen before, and I haven't even gotten through the whole list of other great countries of cinema. So no, it is not worth revisiting necessarily. But this is based off of Walter Isaacson's book, and was a interesting one at the time. And I'm curious to see what you had heard about it leading up to it. For me, I'd sort of heard peripheral stuff. I was writing then. I was in my early days as a film critic, so I'd heard about this movie. I'd heard it had changed hands a couple of times around who was going to be directing, who was going to be starring. But two words really got me very, very, very excited, apart from the Aaron Sorkin of it all, is Danny Boyle, because he is one of my favorite filmmakers. I think as a visual stylist, there's probably... he's pretty high up there as far as some of the best visual stylists around. I love so many of his films, and I was so excited that he was tackling this. But do you remember your first experience of watching Steve Jobs?
Yeah, I mean, I saw it in I was all in for this movie. I was so excited. I mean, like you said, Danny Boyle. I mean, I remember there was talk of David Fincher. He almost signed on to do this movie.
Yeah, it was Fincher Sorkin post Social Network was the
which thing. I don't really understand why he would do that. And maybe we will talk about the differences between this and Social Network. They are pretty different, I think.
Wildly
but to have
different.
Fincher tackle this would have made it maybe too similar. Because I can't imagine him.
He did it. It's called The Killer. It's called.
So I remember I was all. I mean, yeah, Danny Boyle I'm going to speak for my co-host and best friend Drew Taylor on Light the Fuse. Like, he's my Danny Boyle buddy too. I have some other, I have a writing partner, and I have a couple other close friends who are my like best, movie friends. These are all my best friends, and they're not as into Danny Boyle as Drew and I. Drew has always been my Danny Boyle guy.
I'm all in on Danny
So
Boyle. I'm so glad to hear this about you boys. It's just another wrinkle in our relationship. But yeah,
yeah,
Danny Boyle is
I
a
think I find
monster.
myself, yeah, I find myself having to defend Danny Boyle sometimes, which to me is ludicrous because he, especially, I mean, this is an interesting time, I thought, because I was a little bit, I was all in, I was so excited. There's a little bit hesitant. I was a little bit hesitant because obviously the social network thing, like, are we going to do this again? We've done this already. And then also, Danny Boyle, like, he was on such a tear
Yes.
before Trance. And to me, I
Well,
think Trance, I maybe you're a bit, I know Drew is a bigger defender of Trance. So even Drew's a bigger Boyle head than I am, but
I'm like one of those weird people that's like, let's do the run. I think let's talk the run first. So the run
okay.
is
The run is
for
insane.
the
Which
run.
also, let me say also, when I was a kid, the first Danny Boyle movie I saw was actually A Life Less Ordinary, which is much hated, and I loved it when I was a kid. I haven't watched it in 20 years, and I'm kind of afraid to because people talk about how awful it is, but I loved it when I was a kid. I've had such a blast, and I fell in love with Ewan McGregor from that movie.
Well, you go Shallow Grave 94, Trainspotting, the movie that transformed and re just had British cinema kick the door down internationally. Trainspotting 1996, Life Less Ordinary is 97. He does The Beach, has its own little bit of controversy because it's a Ewan McGregor leading project and Leonardo DiCaprio jumps in because he wants to work with Danny Boyle, and that happens, causes a little bit of a rift between those two guys. The Beach is not as well received, even though it's still like a very successful movie. It's not as well received critically. He does 28 Days Later. He does a movie called Millions,
Oh, I love Millions.
which is really underrated. And if you get something I haven't revisited in a million years, but at the time, it's kind of like Pulp Fiction for kids. It's like a cute little thing. It's But he does 28 Days Later, then he does Sunshine, which, holy,
Yeah.
absolutely unreal, both those
That's like a
movies.
I think maybe I can't remember where I had on my list. It's like top five, top seven maybe from 2007, one of the greatest, if not greatest, movie years of my lifetime, other than probably 1999. Just the depth of 1999 is hard to beat. But Sunshine, that movie, I watch it all the time. That's maybe my favorite Danny Boyle.
It's so great. Then you get Slumdog in 2008, and a lot of people have that like frustration with Slumdog that it was like a freight train of, I don't know, people wanting this sort of positivity and goodwill and crazy chance that it is. But I think it's flat out terrible as far as like a visually terrible and uninteresting and boring project without Danny Boyle. I think Danny Boyle gets exactly what he needs to do with that. He does 127 hours, which is very well directed, and so for those people who'd heard about Aaron Rolston, the hiker who gets trapped between literally trapped in a rock and a hard place, stars James Franco, has a big critical reception, even though it's one of those movies for a lot of people that you only want to watch it once.
Oh, I watched that movie a lot.
Yeah, it's
I watched it on a plane recently. I downloaded it on my iPad. I was like, it's been a while. I need to watch this movie. I mean, I love, and Steve Jobs has this a little bit too, but movies that are, very contained. I love it. It's a great showcase for
For
Miss
his
James
talent,
Franco's probably best
oh,
performance. I mean, he's
without
just
question.
the, and I think I've talked to you about this before, movies that have like that kind of release at the end. I mean, that movie has such an amazing release. Yeah, it's just, yeah, I'm his run up
And
until then. I feel like I'm cutting you off. Sorry, but
no, you're not. I was just gonna say, but then Trance happens, and so
yeah.
many people hated it, and guess who saw it at a press screening in Sydney and literally walked out and said, I don't know if a movie will dethrone how much fun I had with that movie. I loved Trance. It's Danny
Really?
Boyle's sicko pervert Interstellar. Inception. It's his sicko pervert Inception, heist
Wow.
within heist, heist of the mind,
Okay.
with the greatest respect and being respectful. Rosario Dawson, it just was sensational, but it had like a big, like, there was a hiccup, there was a schism in the Danny Boyle fandom. It was like, nah, this
Yeah.
sucks. Don't like it.
I will say, I only saw it once in theaters, and I should go back. I should go back.
Right. Watched it a lot.
I'll go back. I'll give it another shot because he deserves it. I'll watch all of his movies for sure. Even Trance. I'll give it another shot.
But before,
it's not even like I hated it. It was just kind of like it just was not. He was on that run was unbelievable. I mean, I know Life Less Ordinary is not well thought of. The Beach was not well thought of at the time, and I didn't think very highly of it at the time either. And I've come around to that movie. But the run from 28 Days Later to Millions, which also I thought was incredible when it came, I saw that in theaters and was blown away, to Sunshine, to Slumdog Millionaire, which, you know, maybe not as good, but wins Best Picture. I mean, it's the, like you said, the approach to that movie is everything, and he brings so much to it more than anyone else could have. And the way they were shooting digital at that time, the way he was doing that with Anthony Dodd Mantle, was just so groundbreaking and wonderful. And then 127 Hours, which I loved. And so it's just that run, then to come with Trance, I was just kind of like, oh man, I don't know. No, I just, it was, did not live up to that run.
But what I can then say is, before we get to Steve Jobs, is in 2017, he makes T2 Trainspotting, which in my mind is a stone cold masterpiece.
Oh,
I Blake, love.
I think I actually like this one more than Drew. I think I'm the only person, I don't know if I've ever talked to somebody who likes that movie. That movie, okay, I'm so happy right now. I loved that movie. Yeah, I thought it was so great and so interesting, the way they tackled these characters at an older age, and it's hard to make movies about addiction.
Yeah.
And people recovering from addiction is really hard. I thought that was just really, I mean, it falls apart a bit in the third act, I thought, but I just thought it was a really interesting movie. And I'm so happy to hear that you liked it. I found someone.
The entanglement of memory and your own history and the lore that you build up for yourself, L-O-R-E, the lore that you build up for yourself, and how these four characters interact with one another. I just think it's the perfect legacy reflection sequel, because it becomes about how do you get to these points in your life? Like, even that, you know, these formative moments, how did you start? And it's all this, like, it's really like a cure for nostalgia in a way, because you're kind of just getting this injection of like candor and honest reflection and all these tragedies and all these regrets. It's just so filled with such a real level of regret. It's amazing. So love that. But Steve Jobs, back to this, a very great biopic approach.
Yeah.
Behind the scenes of three iconic product launches, you've got core that happen over many years. Fassbender is Steve Jobs. Kate Winslet is Joanna Hoffman. Seth Rogen is Steve Wozniak. This is another one of those ones like, wow, Seth Rogen can really act. You know, like, it's not just a comedic guy. He can do some stuff. Catherine Waterston, a.k.a. Shasta Faye Hepworth from Inherent Vice, which is amazing. Jeff Daniels, who's terrific. So many others. I want to go, and the other big person I want to shout out is Michael Stuhlbarg, because he's just magnificent in this movie. So you saw it at the time. There's all those rumors. The Boyle run was considered. What did you think walking out of it when you saw it at the time?
I loved it just straight up right from the beginning. That was not one that I needed to come back to. But, yeah. But you know, like I said, huge Boyle fan, but because of Trance, I was kind of like, oh, I don't know, maybe that run is over. You know, maybe, you know, he's coming down, he's come down to earth. We're coming off of Social Network. You know, how can you do this? But I just, the approach is just, again, I mean, he's so good at coming in with, I mean, I guess a lot of that is also Sorkin, which should be credited for the approach. But
Sorkin's script is amazing. But
yeah,
Sorkin's stuff, and that's like the joke that we all make about the West Wing, of like the walk and talks. Sorkin's stuff had a style where he's like, if I just have this pace, this walk and talk and this frantic, that's why the White House works so perfectly for his mind. Because it's a frantic place to work and they're putting out fires, figurative fires, all the time, you know, of different things that are happening in that show. And they're walking and they're walking and they're walking. And so, but that can also get kind of like visually almost like it's the language of it. So it becomes boring and rote, like, oh, they're doing another walk and talk. Here they go. Here's another West Wing walk and talk. But in this movie, I think aesthetically, the style of each of the different sequences, how they're shot, and just his visual dynamism and finding new ways to make boring or the same spaces interesting, shooting from every angle, like exhausting every single setup in a room.
Projecting quotes on the walls.
Yes, like all those.
I mean, just totally surreal things that are not actually happening. Like, just think of this movie if it was directed by Aaron Sorkin.
How about that, Charles?
I don't mean to, you know, come after Sorkin's directing, but it's a different movie. It's a very different movie. And when you pair Sorkin with a strong director, you get really, really amazing work.
Yeah, true. I mean, what are we talking about? It's, you know, a few good men and Social Network and Steve Jobs, like,
and Moneyball.
Moneyball. Oh my God. Yeah. Moneyball. Jesus Christ.
And I would say, you know, Charlie Wilson's War is not quite on that same level, but Charlie Wilson's War is really good too.
Philip Seymour Hoffman, our guy's in it, man. That Charlie Wilson's War has some of the greatest Philip Seymour Hoffman since anything. It's just so amazing.
So great. I have it on right now in the background. I just kind of have it playing. I like to have it playing in the back while we talk. It's nice. And you know, he's got like the rocket ship. Projected on the, it's like on the wall behind them while they're talking in this long hallway. It's like, who would do that?
Danny Boyle. That's who. So, so there was a couple of other things. So like, for us who are Boyle heads, we were already ready. We were ready for this to be amazing. We knew his potential. Had he lost it? Maybe, maybe not. I was very much like, I really wanted to see Danny Boyle confined by real life and by Aaron Sorkin, just to see how his really distinct visual style and how his way of setting up scenes would complement just like stream of consciousness, constant talk, like the rat-a-tat-tat of the pace. I had no doubt his pace could handle it, because that's one of the really distinctive things about him at the time. It was like, the pace is going to really be fantastic. And I really liked it. And it's interesting, I was checking out like the initial response. And of course I'm going to look at my favorite film critics from 10 years ago to see, and Bill Gabiri, who's a friend and a friend of the show, he wrote this great little quote about this movie. He's like, Boyle does something surprising with Sorkin's endless cascades of dialogue. He turns them into music. And I was like, that is a
leave it to Bilga to give you one sentence better than what I'll give you in this full hour.
it's like, do we need to do the rest of the show? Possibly not. But it's really good. So and again, Jason Bailey, who is part of our network, is like, another reminder of Sorkin's true gifts as a dramatist. It also boasts a crackerjack ensemble cast, subtle yet substantial direction by Boyle, and a welcome explosion of exceedingly tedious biopic tropes. I think that the substantial direction there's something about that at the time. So it was a largely positive response at the time. And I think the only thing in 10 years that is sort of tragic is Danny Boyle, up until really like recently, you know, if you look at his recent stuff, he's been going around this circus of television, so there hasn't been too many films. It's like series. He does Yesterday, which Danny Boyle plus the Beatles should be an amazing movie, and is truly, that's the movie that like completely lost me. As far as him, like, I'm just like, I don't know what to say. But then, you know,
well, it's also not, and it's not just the Beatles too. It's a team up with another incredible screenwriter who I respect so much.
Richard Curtis.
Yeah, sorry. Richard Curtis. He's like the rom-com king, you know? That one disappointed. I didn't hate it, but it disappointed.
No, I hated it. And it's my favorite things. It's Danny Boyle and it's the Beatles. But
look, this is where I got to defend. I'm always out there defending Boyle. Listen, I'll be
in the corner of Trance and you can be in the corner of Yesterday. And I think me and Vincent Cassell and Rosario Dawson will come out on top. So lots of different things he's been doing TV and stuff. And I think the benefit for this movie is it's probably lingered around in a longer time because we've seen the evolution of Aaron Sorkin going from just like purely one of the greatest screenwriters we've ever seen and showrunners to a filmmaker in his own right. And some of the films, if the leading criticism of almost all of the films is not the script, it's just the direction, it's the performance direction cinematically. He's such a renowned dramatist on the stage with great actors and writing and doing stuff in the stage in the confines of a play. But so much of it is not, that's not what it is now. And Danny Boyle has only started to pop back up into people's consciousness with 28 years later because he's going back with Alex Garland to do it all again and Cillian Murphy, which is freaking cool. But it's one of those movies that's kind of trapped in the quagmire of like, oh, that was that good? Like, I can't remember. Is it easy to find? Yes, relatively. It's about Steve Jobs. It should be. But I think 10 years later, I'm just completely blown away by its innovative, like, approach, its speed, the performances of all these people, even stretching. Like, Fassbender had never done a Sorkin, so, like, and he's got such a monstrous task to do. And I feel like 10 years later, it's just one of those ones that escapes. And any person I say, have you seen this or watched it recently, is very positively like, oh, that was good. That was actually one of the last good biopics, you know, that came out. Yeah. So, and I was thinking about Steve Jobs now a lot because A Complete Unknown has just come out in Australia. And I know you guys have had it for a few extra weeks there and all of its nominations. I'm always like trying to penetrate with like a biopic is like, is this just going to do... You know, James Mangold kind of broke the biopic with Walk the Line because, like, everyone then just did Walk the Line for 15 years. Even what's the John C. Reilly?
I can't. It's like, how can you make a biopic after Walk Hard? There have been so many that just keep getting made.
Yeah, exactly.
I actually liked a complete Unknown. You have to focus a biopic. You can't do the like. Oh, there's going to have this 40-year-old actor playing them at 17 years old at the beginning of the movie, you know, really shaved close and, you know, and then at the end of the movie, have them in old man makeup at 85, you know, it's like, it just doesn't work. It's not good.
No.
It ends up being full of so many cliches. It's like, and you always end up having to condense story beats into one scene. So it's like, two things that don't make sense that would never have happened the same day have to happen because of this limited runtime you have in telling the story. So yeah, like Complete Unknown does a good job of focusing it. And Steve Jobs, interestingly, does do the time shifts, but focuses it on those three times. And like this movie is, I think what's part of what's great about it is that it's not like those other, I mean, I liked A Complete Unknown, but it's not like that where it's, I don't take this movie literally.
No.
You know, I don't think that these things didn't happen. Of course they didn't happen. not all these things didn't happen on the day of the launch. And I wonder if, you know, some people, when it came out, kind of bristled at that or something, you know, were kind of like, well, that's totally unrealistic. And it's like, I don't care. It is like a play, and it's amazing, the approach. Like, of course, not all the same people did not confront him on the same day of these three launches. Like, that makes no sense. But I don't care. It all works emotionally.
It doesn't.
And that's all that matters.
But I think that what Sorkin gets at, and I love that you said that, there is nothing like a wedding or a big family event or something for people to inject themselves in.
Yeah.
Or to bring people together and you're like, fuck that guy. And then you can't sometimes help yourself with like, I'm going to say something. And then your person who's close to you is like, don't say anything. It's just let it go. Like, it's not, today's not the day. And you're like, but maybe I want to say something. And you get it with Steve because he's, you know, the real life figure and the portrayal by Michael Fassbender. He's such an uncompromising, visionary kind of person.
Well, and you said Fassbender. I have to I have to say also, you talked about Fassbender a couple of times now. I have to inject and say, Fassbender is so fucking good in this movie. Oh. And he's playing a relentless asshole throughout. And that's really hard to do and still be kind of likable.
Yeah.
And you know, you root for him to become more human by the end, which he, yeah. you know, he finally can do.
Hey, hockey fans. Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Yeah, like in the, it's another thing to think about, I guess. It's, I hadn't thought about that before, but it's like, because he's such a relentless asshole, he probably was impossible to pin down and have these emotional conversations with him.
Exactly.
Whereas when he's doing these launches, all these people know, oh, he's got to be there and he can't escape me. So I'm going to go talk to him there at the event.
And I'm going to say my piece and he can't. Yep. And I'm going to go and I'm going to talk to Joanna Hoffman, played by Kate Winslet. And I'm going to just talk to her and I'm going to get 5 minutes. And I'm going to say my bit. Because he can't leave this building,
yep.
And he can't ignore me because he can't move. And I there is something, even though there's the, it's ultimately a fantasy in that respect. I just love that to hell. It's because it's like, there's been plenty of, like, you see it happen at family anniversaries, engagement parties, huge birthdays, you know, Christmas celebrations. If you celebrate it, big excuses to get people together and weddings. Primarily, that's why there is an entire genre of like fun movies about weddings and chaos and carnage and things that just, it all coalesces and has this thing that happens. And you're like, oh, that's just what happens at these big events. So that's why I think it completely plays. And I just love, it's so fast. It's so fast. It's so unrelenting. It is so rich with filmmaking technique and textures and great scripting and phenomenal character work by each of these people. They don't have to overage to the point that it's ridiculous. They are just right on the boundary line of where they're going to work. And yeah, it's, I think everyone top to bottom, Winslet as well, particularly Jeff Daniels is built for Sorkin. That's no doubt. But Michael Stuhlbarg, Catherine Waterson, Fassbender, they just crush this movie. They just do such an amazing job.
And the three different actresses who portray his daughter.
Yes.
As well. All three of them, I think, do a great job.
Yeah. So we've got,
because that's, you know, that's the evolution of the character that you want to see. You want to see him acknowledge her. And that's something interesting too, that I read at one point. I think that it's based on a book, but that author never spoke to the daughter.
Yeah.
So Steve Jobs' daughter, but Aaron Sorkin did.
Yeah.
Before he wrote the script. So he was able to incorporate, you know, what he learned from her into this that wasn't in the book. And I always thought that was pretty interesting. And I think it worked. I mean, it's a little, you know, it's a little hokey, I guess, at the end, but it all works for me. I'm, you know, I mean, especially now, I saw this before, I had daughters, but I have two daughters now. And I, you know, this is, and I also had a dad who was pretty cold and impenetrable. So like this movie hits me emotionally. Like it works.
Which is the complete opposite of you and I with our kids. It's the complete opposite. The idea that you could be this, you can be like this, like that's his least likable trait in life and in the book that Isaacson has about him. And what probably much later was like his deepest regret. Like that happened. And so it's kind of, I also like that it's kind of unvarnished on that. They don't make him a hero. It doesn't all, it's not all perfect. He doesn't wipe the slate clean of like past indiscretions here. Yeah. He has a lot of influence and push, but he does have these moments that are just so, you know, kind of exultant, that are great in the movie. So 10 years later, you watch it and you're like, why couldn't Sorkin just have the best scripts in Hollywood and work with the best filmmakers? Why couldn't he just have one that went to Scorsese and went to Spielberg went to something that just kept like him, you know? Could there have been another Fincher collaboration where they both were in a cinema? Yes. You know, The Social Network, I know we're so completely high on that together. And you're like, yeah, there's gotta be these things that that could have happened. And that's, you know, really now it's just more like there's so much stuff people will probably even forget that this movie exists. But it has too many of my guys in it, including John Ortiz.
That, oh, he's so great.
He's really good.
So great.
He's good. And he's like, what? doesn't have an OS. So yeah, he's really great. I've got a lot of time for that. Any other thoughts in the 10 years since that you've thought about it? It's been around.
I mean, it's hard not to think about the centerpiece sequence of the movie. When I think of this movie, I think of the sequence in the middle of the movie.
Yeah.
The Jeff Daniels confrontation in the middle segment, which yes. I think lands smack dab the middle of the movie.
Yeah.
And it's that confrontation and the build of it, that sequence with the music and everything, and it's cross-cutting between, you know, an earlier fight they had and this fight they're having, and also Steve Jobs confronting the board and then leaving Apple. Like, it's that whole, and then the rain and like, you know, it's just the build of that is just, oh my God, it's magnificent. It really is like it elevates the movie to a whole nother level. I think just that sequence alone.
Yeah.
And it's hard not to think about that scene. That scene I think about a lot.
And just the play of time, how good it is to do an active, living, breathing flashback where people are detached from the time. So their perspective is altered, and then the reality of the flashback and watching how the interplay plays together. Yeah. And if you think about it in retrospect, sometimes you're a bit more like, no, Jeff Daniels was right to do what he did and da-da-da-da-da. And then you kind of watch it, you're like, no, these guys in they were put on two freight trains that were running steadily towards a collision course between one another. And in this, they are both culpable. And it's a great moment where you're like, these people are both culpable. It's a great thing. The sliding doors or what if things is, firstly, originally Aaron Sorkin wanted your guy, Charles Hood, Tom Cruise, to play Steve Jobs, which he could totally do.
He could totally do it. I think he was a little too old at this time, though.
Yeah, to play the younger stuff, but he really wanted Cruise to do it. The rat-a-tat, I think it would have been fantastic. It's like
2005, 2002, Tom Cruise, you know, Minority Report, War of the Worlds era. That, like, if he had done it then, he would have knocked it, I mean, out of the park.
Absolutely. So it's
it would have.
And another one is another person who's worked with Sorkin, like Jessica Chastain, was also offered the role that Kate Winslet eventually took. But it's actually more fun in some of the, I guess, speculative lead up, which is like Fincher was going to direct it. They dropped him because he wanted $10 million and full creative control of the project. Love
Fincher. I hadn't heard that. That's amazing.
Fincher wanted Christian Bale to have the lead role. And then Danny Boyle signed on. And because of The Beach, then Leonardo DiCaprio was originally signed on. And then he exited the project as Inarritu's The Revenant started coming up because he wanted to do The Revenant. And so then
Bale, I don't know about DiCaprio in this.
I don't know about DiCaprio.
I don't know. I love DiCaprio. Absolutely adore him. But I like him scuzzy. I can't him clean cut. I don't know. I'm not as into in his older age, you know. I mean, like, I love him in Catch Me If You Can.
I'm trying to remember if I mean, that's probably the closest to a biopic that he's done other than The Irishman, where he's playing a real life character. I don't like him as Jobs. I think Bale's a great pick because Bale has some of a similar look. He's got the verbosity, but he's also rat-a-tat-tat. But I do, it's really interesting because then they came back around on Bale post the Fincher thing, and then he just was like, I don't think I'm right for it. And then Fassbender said in an interview in November 2014, he's like, I thought to myself, Christian Bale is perfect. Why isn't he doing it? And, and he said, and when I was in London promoting the film, I called him up and told him that myself. Like, I can't believe you didn't do this movie. You would have been perfect for it. So there's a couple of cool sliding doors things. Would I have loved to see Danny Boyle work with Christian Bale? Sure. Would I have loved to see Fincher do this with his complete creative control? Who knows what the hell he would have done? But I just don't know why at this time Sony could have been like, we're not doing a Fincher movie. And that's probably It's probably the girl with a dragon tattoo hangover at that point, right?
I think we're better off. I think he's better off. I think no matter how different he tried to make it, it still would have just been too similar to Social Network stylistically. You know, I can't. He's just and Social Network, which is probably a masterpiece. I mean, you know, why would you, you know?
Isn't that the year that the King's Speech won Best Picture?
I think so. Either that or the Artist. I can't remember. Yeah, something like that.
Who cares about the Oscars? No one cares. But I'm gonna look it up.
He was on quite a run, so I'm sure he would have done something amazing. But I am happy that we have the Danny Boyle version, because I think this is the best possible left turn from Social Network you can get.
I think it's so visually interesting that you cannot discount. If you really truly want to see, like, this is a film that the infrastructure of the script is so tightly wound, and it could just be a beautiful play and could have some visual invention, like in a tactile living space where you're in behind the scenes constantly of these like three different events that could be dressed in slightly different ways. If you just want to see what a director can really do to add visual dynamism, to add like interesting things, to add these like dreamlike sequences, to do these hyper speed up, you know, inserts and cuts, to use time, to incorporate flashbacks into the living time. I think this is a Danny Boyle trophy for me.
Yeah, and the format we haven't even talked about, that he shot the first segment, I think it was 16mm.
16mm.
And then the second segment is 35mm, and then the third segment is digital, which is so awesome. And, you know, I think Fincher probably would have done something, probably did, but he would have shot it all digitally, and he probably would have treated it to maybe do something like that, to make it look like something from, you know, the 80s and something from the 90s and then something from now, you know. But I think the way Boyle did it, I mean, the way that the texture of the 16mm in that first section,
yes,
you just feel like you're back there in the 80s.
And there's those great garage shots of Fassbender's Steve Jobs and Rogan's Wozniak in a garage, and it almost feels like that's on Super 8 or something. It's like the light is bleeding through the frames of all of those flashbacks. It's so beautiful. It's
awesome. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's, I guess it's 84, 88, and then 98, right?
Yes.
Is that what it is? Yes. Yeah.
So we were just on the cusp of all these different, or, you know, whatever the prevalent technology was at the time to match what we're doing is like what they're doing. They've got the inexperienced, the lo-fi, the kind of romanticized Silicon Valley first part in 16mm, then 35, big, beautiful, sweeping, gorgeous 35, and then the digital. I think I love the complementary things. It's those different looks, those subtle things that if you're not a trained eye, you're not thinking about, or you're just thinking that the aesthetic has slightly changed, but not realizing the grain of the film has changed. I totally understand it. Depending on your movie setup, you know, some people might watch this on a plane. Some people might watch it on their phone or an iPad. They're not, you're going to be watching it on a killer setup all the time. But 10 years later, this was one of the treats that personally was unlocked for me in this year's decade project for 2015 and 2025. I'm just like, this is such a great movie, and God, Danny Boyle can direct the hell out of it. And my final conclusion really on the film is like, I think all these actors, so many of these actors in this movie do such an amazing job unexpectedly with Sorkin. I think Sorkin's one of the great screenwriters, and he should just write more scripts and work with other great filmmakers. And I think that Danny Boyle is such a stylist. I don't think that Danny Boyle, like that Alex Garland connection before Alex Garland went on to make his own great movies. I'm just like, Alex Garland's a bit like, I think he was a bit over being a director, writer, director after Civil War and the responses and stuff. He's like, I think I might just go back to screenwriting. And I'm like, yeah, cool. Just write 10 more sick genre movies with Danny Boyle, bro. Like, I'll watch every one year. Like,
I read that script for Sunshine. His writing style is just so awesome.
It's
great. I love to see it. It's great to see Boyle team up with different. I mean, I know that the Richard Curtis movie was not good, but I love the idea of him and Richard Curtis, and, you know, him and Aaron Sorkin, and then now back with Alex Garland, which I'm so excited about 28 years later.
Yes.
Is Steve Jobs on? There's no 4K disc, right, of this movie?
No, not that I am
So
aware of.
I bought it. It went on sale at one point in the last year, and I bought it on 4K digital. And it looks great, other than the title cards. It's just like there's a really pixelated title cards, and I hate that. I have a really big TV that I got like a year and a half ago that I'm now doing all the 4K, and I'm watching all of my favorites in 4K, and it looks awesome. But like, I can't believe they didn't do a better job making these title cards in 4K. But I guess it was not a real 4K transition,
It's not a real tra
transfer. It's
it's
just
not a real
a,
transfer.
yeah, that's too bad.
Yeah, whenever the digital's like it's 4K now, I'm like, I've got those skeptical hippo eyes. I'm like, okay, let's just we'll see. We'll see what you say is here. Charles, I can't wait for people to finally see the movie you've been working on, which has been going
Yes. Did you ever? I sent you a cut at one point, I
No, you
think,
sent me
which I don't
two
know if I'm
cut.
allowed to
No,
do that or
you
not.
sent me
So,
two or
but it's
three
fine.
cuts.
Nobody's listening. Who
I
cares?
really
We'll know.
liked
We'll
the cut,
care.
and then they were really different in those two times.
Yes.
That had been
Yeah.
that there were
It's
more
even more
notes.
different. It's even
Yeah,
more
I can't even imagine. And there's
different.
more
But I
scenes to
think
come.
for the most part, it's getting better, and I'm excited. We're doing an additional shoot. The studio's really excited about the movie. They love it, so we're doing an additional shoot in a few weeks to just add a couple. Actually, one of the things that we're shooting is we originally wrote a scene that was supposed to be set on an airplane, and then they were like, "We don't have the money to do that. You have to shoot it somewhere else." So we rewrote it to be in an Uber. And then we were editing for months and months, and the studio said, "You know what? I think this scene that's in an Uber, it would be better if it was on an airplane. Why don't we reshoot it on an airplane?" I'm like, "Oh, great idea! Yeah, let's do that."
And you know what
So,
Charles said
now we're back to doing
as a fan of Mission Impossible, he's like, I only want to shoot it in a Hercules over Dubai. And I want my lead character
it.
to do a halo jump. And he's gonna have to train for months to get his license to jump out of these things. And I need a cameraman to jump out of the plane backwards with an IMAX rig on his head.
Yeah, it's not that big of a deal.
It's
Come
not a big deal. And people are like, are
on.
you influenced by anything? No, not at all. But I'm just saying that that would be so much better. No, so I'm excited to see how the film is evolving. I'm excited for you there. I'm also very excited for most folks who would listen to me know you guys because I love you guys so much with Light the Fuse. I can't wait to see the lead up, the run up to the final reckoning. So and I'm so glad that you and your beautiful family are safe in this crazy time in LA. And it's an incredibly difficult time, and I appreciate your time so much.
Yes, thank you.
And you have an even more difficult task of wrangling your co-host Drew to
Yes.
actually appear on this show with you and I to do.
It's very difficult to wrangle Drew, and I will have him come on. We will do it. We'll do Rogue Nation.
Rogue
That's a movie
Nation,
that
is
ba
it?
it, the plot of Rogue Nation baffles him for some reason, so we'll have to explain it to him. But we love
I'm
that movie,
glad
of
that one of the
course.
hosts of Light the Fuse is baffled by one of the plots. Usually I need to go to you guys to explain stuff to me. I'm like, what happened there? What was
Yeah.
this? You guys can tell me the whole history, backstory.
Yeah.
But yeah, so no,
I'm
I'm.
really excited for everybody to see, because also we're doing well, I can't say what it is yet, I guess. We haven't announced that yet. But we have new episodes coming soon for Light the Fuse. And I really, if you have any interest in Mission Impossible, if you like any one of the Mission Impossible movies, you should go subscribe to Light the Fuse, because in the coming weeks, we're gonna have some really awesome stuff about Mission Impossible and your favorite Mission Impossible movie, I'm sure.
I can't
So
wait.
you should take listen to it. It'll be great.
And as I've told you before, my favorite maybe is Rogue Nation. I love Rogue
Yes.
Nation.
Yeah, we had you on the show
I
to
fell in
talk about it.
love.
We did
I fell
one Rogue Nation minute with
one
you.
Rogue Nation minute, yeah, which is that scene where he first meets Ilsa Faust.
Yeah.
And
So
like
great.
I was
Do
like,
we know each other?
that's just so great when she shows him the I just love he's looking at her and she looks at him and she's so beautiful. She takes off her shoes and just shows him the little rabbit's foot
Oh,
thing.
yeah, so
And then he's just like, we've met before, right? Have we? It's
great.
that great climbing up the pole. Yeah, it's got everything. It's
Yeah,
got
yeah,
everything. It's a
yeah.
great movie. It's a great mission. But yeah, I can't wait for you. You know, I'm ride or die for you guys. I go back and listen to episodes all the time. Whenever I hear like David Koepp's name, I go back and I find your David Koepp episodes
Oh,
or De
those ones are
Palma.
really, yeah, those
The
two of the best,
two of
Kep
the
and De
best,
Palma.
Koepp and De Palma. I go back and listen to Brad Bird. Brad Bird's so funny because he feels
Yeah.
like he sounds angry that you guys know so much.
just the best thing about the Brad Bird interview is we actually went to his house and talked to him, which was surreal. And we felt like we were imposing because he's Brad Bird.
Is his house just like the Incredibles house? Like it must appeal.
He had some amazing like artwork and stuff on the walls from certain things, Iron Giant and whatever, you know, things like that. It was really very cool to see. He kept wanting. We kept wanting to leave because we felt like we shouldn't take up too much of his time. And if you listen to that interview, it's so funny because, you know, every 45 minutes we're kind of like, okay, well, it's been so great talking to you. And he's like, whoa, I've got more to talk about. We haven't talked about the IMAX. I want to talk about the IMAX. Can we talk about the IMAX? And it's like he just keeps doing that over and over again. It's so funny. He was amazing. It's one of our best as well, for sure.
Yeah, that's so fun. I love where he's like, how do you, like, how did you know about the snow? Like he was very, it's very good. It's, you guys have a great show. I love it. There's no one doing it better. And it's very exciting to hear. It's exciting to know that in the year of 2025, that Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning is coming. It's just so exciting. It's a movie that you and I have talked about it when it was still the Dead Reckonings part one and two. And mm-hmm. no one will ever take that away from me because I have the beautiful 4K steelbooks of all of the missions now. It says Dead Reckoning Part 1 on it. I'm not buying one that changes it to Dead Reckoning without its Part 1.
It says it on the movie too. Yeah, you know, yeah. It's in the actual movie itself. So I don't know if they're going to be able to change that.
No, they might retcon it at a later date, George Lucas style, but it's not, you're not leaving it on my shelf. That's it. So I'm so excited. Thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah.
And if you guys want to check it out, like the best place I can tell you to buy Steve Jobs is probably a 4K on Apple because there's a 4K digital version on Apple because there's nowhere else that it really exists, but it's really worthwhile. And Danny Boyle movies, Trainspotting 2, deeply underrated. Check it out. I remember film critic Walter Chaw at the time said that that movie had so much in common with Moonlight at the time, and he wasn't sure which one he loved more. And I think that's
interesting.
It's a really great look at life and regrets and past and entanglements. And I just love it to pieces. I truly love it. It's my second favorite movie called T2, but only by a hair. So Charles, you're the best. Thank you for doing this, guys. Thanks for listening. And if you're listening to this early in the beginning part of the year, thank you so much for all of our patrons. And if you're listening to this on our main feed and you want to catch up on new decade projects, we'll continue this every year, looking back 10 years. You can go to patreon.com/oneheatminute to find new episodes, but you may be listening to this at the end of the year. So thank you very much for listening, and I hope you enjoy it. And there'll be more episodes of the Decade Project soon.
Hockey fans, can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.